the 11th episode of Tales for the East, a podcast series from Denniston, Sighthill and Haghill in Glasgow's East End. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Alistair Satchell, and I'll be your host for this series. In this episode, I talk with Mark Chambers, the radio coordinator of Bolt FM. Bolt FM are based in the East End of Glasgow and make radio for young people by young people. They've been serving their community for 20 years now and making all sorts of difference to young people's lives. Mark talks about Bolt FM's work in the East End and how they made contact with communities in Zambia, where they have an exchange programme which takes young Scots to Zambia and young Zambians to Scotland. Our conversation covers loads of ground, taking in Scots linguistic identity and broadcast culture, amongst many other topics. Without further ado, I pass you over to Mark Chambers of Bolt FM. Who are you?
I'm Mark Chambers. I'm the coordinator for Bolt FM, which is Scotland's longest running youth radio station.
Fantastic. And where are Bolt FM based? What area do they cover?
So Bolt FM's main base is in Blackhill, Provan Mill, in the northeast, but we work around the northeast, so that's Denniston, Haghill, Royston, Cranhill, Rickasey, all these kind of local communities that kind of make up the northeast. We try and get there.
Where does Bolt FM come from? What is the logic behind Bolt FM?
I think it was originally part of a Royston Road Parks project. It was called originally, so I think it used to run for kind of a month at a time. You know, we are working in areas that have often not had that many opportunities for young people. So a huge thing for us is to give young people something to do. And the stuff that we can give them is really high quality equipment and like great opportunities to use it, to have fun and to play music, but also to kind of interview high profile politicians and all sorts of stuff. But we are really fortunate that the funding that we have enables us to do it for free. So that young people don't need to pay a penny for anything that we do, that's trips or anything. And then again, it's about, you know, lots of different communities don't have that many free opportunities for young people to do things that are kind of extracurricular. So that's why we have a mobile radio studio that we take about to all these different places. So that can be primary schools, can be youth clubs, secondary schools, anywhere really. You know, we've broadcast from a boat, broadcast from the Commonwealth Games, from the Scottish Parliament. So we just go where the young people are, in particular areas that maybe need a little bit more for young people to do and get them playing their tunes and giving us the chat.
Why is the work that you do important then? Why is having young people's voices heard, young people's choices in music, young people questioning politicians and other people, why is this important? Why does this matter?
I mean, I think there's a combination of things. We're working with young people that maybe don't have a lot of representation, particularly of their type of voice, but, you know, youth people in general. But we're working with young people from the northeast of Glasgow. And, you know, you're kind of hard-pressed to find other people that they could look at and say, yeah, that's how I talk, that's how I sound, that's what I look like, that's what the music I like. And I think it's important, you know, culturally, what their taste is and how they talk is just as valid as any other culture. It just is completely underserved. So that's a huge thing for me. I think as well, it's about kind of giving young people like that in these areas a chance to be active citizens. It's not as if young people don't have views. They've got lots of views. The thing is that sometimes it takes a project like this to actually get a politician or somebody in a powerful position to come face to face with a young person like that. Which is why it's kind of always been a mainstay of what we do, that we do full general every election we do full coverage of. So anybody that's standing in our seat does an interview.
Wow.
So long as they agree. But you know what? You'll be able to look through the ones that didn't agree and they were all given plenty of opportunities. But the young people do a great job. They're great interviewers. They have local interests and they've got international interests. And that's experiences for them that I think is really important. I can't remember speaking to any politicians when I was growing up, whereas it's pretty common. Well, you know, it's a regular thing for young people here to speak to MPs, MSPs, Deputy First Ministers. And that's important, I think.
What particular successes of this kind have you had? Are there any moments that stick out in your memory in particular?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, following on from the politicians, you know, we set up in Holyrood, the mobile radio studio, and we had three amazing young presenters, and they interviewed rapidly the politicians that we could get, you know, so that maybe they were briefed and had 10, 15 minutes to get ready for an interview with John Swinney. And all these interviews were going out live, and they were excellent. And that was really fun. But, you know, we love it when we're working with young people who are really passionate about radio. I'm really passionate about radio and podcasting, but a lot of the successes we've had, or what I think one of the bigger differences we can make, is we are in a position that we can be trusted adults for young people, and we can be there for them. I mean, for me, I've always wanted Bolt FM not to be like some sort of, you know, prestige kind of youth arts project where the young people at the best get promoted to the top, and you know, it's not about that. It's about what the young people that are in front of us need. And sometimes that is just to talk about their lives. Sometimes it's to need support for things. Sometimes it's just to have a laugh. And then sometimes it's to, like, learn how to work faders. You know, but that's up to them. And we are there to facilitate what opportunities they want and what they need from us. So a lot of the successes for me, I think about times where a young person has maybe said his that coming to Bolt FM helped them through a difficult time in their life. That will matter more to me than any amazing broadcast. You know, that's what's really special about what we do, and luckily the staff and the volunteers that we have here, is that everybody has that same frame of mind. You know, the young people come first, and whatever that means. You know, we're always going to be making radio, and we're always going to be making really fun, sparky radio, but we want young people who, particularly in the past couple of years, have not had a great time. And, you know, we work in areas where young people can have a lot going on in their lives. So having somewhere they can go, that the environment is predictable, that they know they can get support, that they have control over what they're doing, and they get to lead. That's kind of the success that's, like, at the front of my mind a lot of the times.
That's absolutely superb. Can I ask then, about your participants, are there any kind of characters or people that you've gone through the Bolt FM that you would like to identify what they've done since they left, or anything like that at all? How has it helped the people who've taken part?
Yeah, that's interesting. We've got young people that have been through Bolt FM that have went on to BBC apprenticeships and look to pursue careers in broadcasting. We've had young people that went on to be DJs and things like that. It's always kind of fun when you hear things like that. And I think now that Bolt FM's 20 years old, as of this year, we are starting to interview people from the past and trying to reconnect with a lot of people. So we're starting to find this out. But it's so fun to hear people who are now, you know, in their 30s and 40s talking about their experience of Bolt FM and what it meant to them. I don't know, they're all characters. To be honest, Alistair, like, to pick one out is really difficult. Do you know what? Actually, there was three, this was a few years ago, and I won't name them, but there were a few young guys who, they would come to youth clubs and they would kind of be around, but Bolt FM, they weren't massively engaging with. We were live one night, and this was round about the time where Facebook Live was quite a big thing. So we had a kind of, this was like the first year that we were streaming, live streaming the broadcasting. These three guys ended up staying in the studio for hours doing it, and then got something like 10,000 views on their thing in the end, taking requests and giving shout outs, and the community just so bought into it. And seeing these three kind of absolute Jack the Lad types giving their shout outs and playing tunes that people are loving, that was amazing. And then they got the buzz of seeing, oh, look, 10,000 views, you know. So that was a really cool moment. But to pick out characters for me is hard. You know, like, we want everybody to feel welcome here and to enjoy it. And the benefit that we get from that is that we end up working with, like, a real variety of personalities. So, yeah, difficult to pick one out.
With radio, you've got production, you've got the production team, but you've also got the listener. Who is the listener for Bolt FM?
I mean, I guess I would be the most devout listener. I'm listening to it all. You know, it's funny, radio, when we have an FM license, can be a slightly frustrating thing, particularly for young people now that are used to streaming numbers and instant feedback, because to try and explain, well, you know, we can't ever really know how many people are tuning in and when they're tuning in when it's FM, but when we look at our online streaming, it's kind of interesting how many international listeners we have. That always slightly surprises me, but I suppose after how many years it's went on and social media presences and things like that, that it kind of makes it quite far-reaching. But I think, honestly, that we have a lot of buy-in from the community. That's the thing that makes it. Bolt FM's been a mainstay of this area for so many years. People know it. People have been through it, and now their kids are going through it. And that, I mean, going back to the boys and having their kind of 10,000 views, that's because the community kind of rally around it and rally around everything we do. And our you know, it's part and parcel of what we do. You know, our organisation, our charity, is kind of split pretty 50-50 between people who kind of grew up outside the area and people that grew up here and live here. So that makes a huge difference, you know, that it really is a community project. So yeah, we have a lot of listeners like that, but we are one of the lesser interactive radio stations so, you know, we'll take comments and stuff, but it takes policing, you know, like, it's one thing to be on top of the young people swearing, but to be on top of the adult listeners is totally something else.
That's brilliant. You talk about the linguistic identity of the East End of Glasgow, and this is brilliant. I remember listening to Radio 4 one night. I love radio, and there's a program on, I think it was called Chain Reaction, where people would interview someone, and the celebrity would interview another celebrity, and that celebrity would then choose to interview another of their friends. And it was a good program to listen to. And there was one night I tuned in without realizing what it was, and I heard two West Coast Scots voices on. It was Frankie Boyle and...
Is it Grant Morrison?
It was Grant Morrison and Frankie Boyle, exactly that. And I couldn't believe I was hearing my own accent on the radio. It just didn't feel like BBC Radio 4. It was like, well, what's this? This is brilliant. I felt the excitement of that, and it was just amazing. Yeah. How does linguistic identity, both in terms of Scots linguistic identity, but also ethnic linguistic identity, and including if there's any Gaelic there as well as part of this question, how do you celebrate and how do you work with these identities?
Yeah, I love that question. Because I feel the exact same way. So when I hear things like that, I love it. But I also love hearing it out of the normal context. So you do hear the kind of West Coast accent, but you hear it in mass media in normally quite specific circumstances. So it's either
now a voice from the street.
pretty much, you've got, if you're not in comedy, you know, you're probably not getting a nationwide audience with that accent, unless, you know, you might be in Clyde One or something like that. But there seems to be quite defined limits. I mean, even what's quite good about the example you used is that, you know, that was a fairly kind of intellectual conversation that they were having.
Oh, it was massively so. Yeah, it was brilliant.
But that's the thing. I think that we do have still have a big problem with the fact that, you know, that we all instantly make judgments when you hear somebody's voice. Doesn't matter where they're from.
Right.
But the judgments that are made about our accents in the West Coast, I think, are still quite tired and old. And I think that we have still a lot of work to do about it. I mean, this is something that I've thought a lot about, because one of the main things that I've worked on the past few years is making young people talk more on the microphone.
Yeah.
And what's been disappointing for me from working in this job is seeing the insecurity in young people's voice, and something I really want to work on. I think it's good to be positive in life anyway, but I will never ever be negative about somebody's voice, but particularly a young person's voice. I mean, but it, you know, the accent comes with baggage, and it's something that we need to encourage. I don't know how much. I mean, I suppose this is a kind of universal thing in some regards. You know, people don't necessarily like the sound of their own voice as a normal thing, but I think there's still a kind of added weight to it. And I think particularly, you know, in these kind of out of context situations, I think young people do get insecure about it. And I think, again, that's partly where Bolt FM comes in, particularly when we're broadcasting live. You know, every year we'll do 2 weeks where it's 8 a.m. till midnight.
Wow.
For 2 weeks.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's great because when young people come to the studio, we'll have the radio on outside.
Yeah.
So they can listen to what's going on. And just the initial trepidation to just having the familiarity of them and their peers' voice coming through the radio makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So, but they need to hear it. They need to see people do it. And that's a huge thing for me. I think that in general, you know, I always hate the phrase, he just likes the sound of his own voice. Because I think, well, you know, we wouldn't say that about any other kind of part of somebody's person that you can't change, you know, like that, you know, we've got all these body positivity movements, but we need a voice positivity movement. That's, you know, I think that people are still very quick to be very snarky and judgmental and make comments about people's voices, particularly when they're unusual. And I hope that we can get to a point where we start to challenge that because it trickles down.
Whereabouts in Glasgow are you from originally yourself?
So I'm outside. I grew up the first until a pretty early age in Springboig, and then my family moved from the East End to Renfrew.
Lovely.
Which is where I grew up.
How long have you been in the job now yourself?
4.5 years.
So how have you seen the area change within that time? And what role has Bolt FM played in observing this or being an agent of change? Or what have you noticed?
You know, I guess I have a kind of a specific context as well. You know, Bolt FM is one project within quite a few spheres of our charity. So what's been really exciting is to see, you know, now the community has like a bikeability project, which is, you know, helping people fix their bikes for free, helping them move about the town easier, but then also working, you know, the community's now working on campaigning to change the streets. You know, we've recently had bike lanes put in and things like that. That there's been a lot of grassroots community work done in the past few years. We love getting charities and projects in that are making positive contributions to speak to young people. That's one of our favourite things to do, is to kind of highlight positive cases. And it's incredible the actual amount of organisations that are working just in the northeast of Glasgow that make a huge amount of difference. If that's from food poverty stuff to clothing, it's to healthy lifestyles, cycling, to everything, you know, there is a lot going on. You know, it's difficult because obviously we've had this COVID-19 period, so in terms of things that have changed, I think, you know, I'm thinking a lot about young people and kind of what their needs are at the moment. And it is a difficult time for them. So it is difficult to mix these things up. What I will say is, do you know what definitely has changed for young people, though? TikTok. And this... So I think it is worth saying, because I think, you know, I'm at the point where I've looked at TikTok. I don't yet understand how to use TikTok.
Okay,
so I need a young person to really like sit down and explain it to me and talk me through it. But I guess with all of these kind of new social media platforms, the young generation get on it quick, and by the time that, you know, I'm on it and stuff, it's kind of they're on to the next thing.
Yes, indeed.
But this one is different in that it's the level of media savviness that it's bringing on is incredibly interesting. So, you know, I mean, I've talked a lot about how much of a struggle it's been to get a lot of young people to want to use their voice on a microphone, you know. But what you're seeing now is a lot of young people who are very happy to be filming themselves. And I think that's really interesting. And I think it might make a wee bit of a difference. It's starting to make a difference to us. I'm finding that some of the younger ones have a little bit less of that kind of self-consciousness about them, which I think is really interesting.
That's really fascinating. Yeah, TikTok is so immediate. I think that's the thing. It ties into what you're saying about numbers and figures, so that people are able to understand that as well. I think it is a positive thing, but I wonder also if it's tied into the sort of dopamine addiction of our world as well, of like, oh, someone liked it, therefore I feel good. So it's an interesting one, but I think that's where Bolt FM's different to TikTok, in that it's validation as a collective as well, which is a different thing. So yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't, you know, I'm not saying TikTok defo a good thing. I'm just saying this is one of the interesting ramifications of it.
Yeah.
But and I agree, and to be honest, one of the things that I like about Bolt FM being a radio thing is that it's an opportunity for young people to not have to worry about what they look like.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, it's still just as interesting, you know, in terms of, you know, that level of confidence that young people have. I think when you talk about youth projects and giving young people confidence, it might seem a bit kind of cliche perhaps, or a bit expected. But I actually think you can forget how absolutely vital having confidence is.
Yes, definitely.
Particularly having it as a young person.
No two ways about it. I think that's exactly it. I was thinking about it in terms of a lot of the work I do as well, is that there's an old Marxist piece of philosophy which says that the workers should own the means of production. And I think that you can take that down to, most of us have got mobile phones in our pockets with cameras, which is brilliant for filmmaking or TikTok or whatever. But actually, it's the ownership of the idea. How do you own the ideas in your head? How do you then externalize these ideas? And how do you own your own voice? And I think that's a really vital thing as part of this as well for young people and other people who might find themselves on the margins of society, whether through a learning disabilities, as we might have said in the past, or neurodiverse issues or whatever. It's really important that we own our own thoughts, which is really, I think radio can be really... and podcasting could be fantastic for that. Really good.
Absolutely. And it's an opportunity to young people, when they come and they're doing radio, they have to self-generate their ideas. Yes. and you need to have some sort of level of faith in what you're talking about, which can be a challenge. But I mean, every young person has something interesting to talk about.
Totally.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, again, it comes down to having that belief and putting it across. That being said, I have heard a lot about Fortnite.
Yes, indeed.
I think every topic is interesting, but some less so.
Indeed. There'll be Fortnite this week, it'll be Apex next week. Who knows exactly?
I know. Exactly.
FM obviously work within Glasgow in the northeast, but you also have a presence in international waters, or in the international sphere. Could you talk a little bit about what Bolt FM do in Africa, for instance?
Yeah, so I mean, we have a partnership, a kind of relationship with Zambia that goes back maybe 15 years now. So there was originally a group of young people from kind of across the northeast went to Zambia for 2 weeks. This was I want to say 2006, but I'd have to check. And that kind of left a lasting impression. The leader of St. Paul's Youth Forum, Neil Young, who, and that's the organisation, the charity that Bolt FM sits in, he did a lot of research into, you know, the costs of young people when they were on a kind of antisocial behaviour path, and the cost of criminality and things like that to society. And he did that and worked out what the cost would be of a young person who would end up going through several types of systems, needing support and things like that. And contrasted it with how much it could cost to give them a life-changing trip.
Amazing.
And so from that, the whole philosophy of it being that we can take young people to somewhere that's going to give them a completely different perspective and give them incredible memories that they can enjoy forever. And you know, the young people from that got so much, so it kind of became a bit of a thing. And then my predecessor went out and he took a mobile radio studio with him, and so worked with the Zambians to set up their radio studio, which was really cool. and you know, it's a specific part of Zambia we have connections with, Ndola. Yeah, so then a few years ago, we took another group of young people out, again, from around the kind of Glasgow northeast region that we work in. We took somebody from five different areas, so there was that kind of community representation. And we were teamed up with a group of young Zambians of similar age, and they were our kind of tour guide around Zambia for a couple of weeks, whilst we made a radio documentary about media, particularly about the idea of the ways that media can be used for societal good and ways it can be used for societal bad. With an eye to, you know, when we were doing workshops in the lead up to going to Zambia for this project, it was a lot to do with Google your community and see what comes up in the news section, you know. So if you Googled Royston or you Googled Hack Hill or something, you can imagine what is going to come up.
Yeah.
But as we spoke about earlier, there's a lot of amazing things that happen in these areas too.
Yeah, totally.
Like, there's a lot of incredible people that do run all sorts of projects and organisations and do incredible things. It doesn't get highlighted by the news. So we were kind of looking at ways that we can kind of help our young people to have a pride in their community, but then also to learn about a completely different media landscape and a completely different culture. So yeah, we had an amazing time. We travelled around Zambia. We visited local radio stations and print and presses and interviewed journalists and interviewed and got all these amazing stories and made friends that, you know, we're all still friends with now. I think the young people still got their big group chat on the go, which is nice. And it was an incredible thing. And then the group of Zambians came back to Scotland the following year for 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
And then we showed them around Scotland. So yeah, it was an incredible project.
How did the Zambians get on in Scotland? What was a particular highlight for them?
You know, we wanted them to see snow.
Oh yeah.
So they really liked that. That was novel. But you know, we brought them here in summer. We tried our best to make it but it just was not the summer we've just been having. It was more of a standard summer.
The grey season, so, you know.
Yeah, very much so. I think like the sun peaked out a couple of times, but they were very cold. At the same time, like they loved it and got on great, and you know, they got to see the parliament and yeah, they got to see all sorts of things, and it was great. And it's kind of cemented all those friendships and those connections and for a long, long time. And whenever I talk to any of the young people that went on that trip, and we talk about Zambia and it will always come up, it's great to hear, you know, they'll tell me, oh, I was talking to this person and did you hear about what happened to that person? And, you know, we've built those kind of connections. And I think partly that was because it was a partnership, you know. We weren't going there to help the Zambians any more than they were helping us, you know, like, so, yeah, it was special.
And are there any moments in particular that you can think of from that trip, from your own experience, where you thought, this is it, this is the gold?
So many. It's so hard to kind of cherry pick. I mean, it was really, there were lots of things that were really, that were really striking. It was kind of cool for me, obviously, being the Bolt FM guy, to see the young people go about the radio studios in Zambia. That was really fun. And get to interview presenters, and that was really cool. You know, it was a bit of a whirlwind. The young people had, you know, we had so much to do and a lot of places to see. But I think, like, you know, it was the connections, it was the people that we were with. I mean, like, it was just incredible how welcoming they were to us. The way that we were treated the whole time and looked after was amazing. You know, we went to a local church that we were partnering with. And that church was one of the smaller ones in Ndola, so that was maybe 1,200 people came Sunday morning. And they had five choirs. But it starts at 8 a.m. and so you're up early. And for young people, that's, you know, that might as well be 5 a.m., 8 a.m. on a Sunday. So
yeah, totally. Yeah. me as well, I must admit, but yes.
I know. Yeah, so, you know, we went down to the church for 8 a.m. and we're sitting there, and we had our recorders as well. We were recording. We've got some amazing recordings of like some of their choirs and stuff. But they brought us up at eight in the morning after a few songs had happened, and introduced us to the church, including the young people. But that's, you know, that's a big audience. And so we thought, okay, this is nice. We're going to be introduced. But then the music started playing, so we were to dance a bit.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, it was. But, like, you know, I will dance, but yes, normally quite late on a Friday, Saturday. Certainly exactly. Not 8 a.m. on a Sunday. I don't think my body had been prepared for that. So they got some horrible dad dancing off of me, but...
I'm in a box, I'm trapped in a box. A big fish
very
little
fish. So. Yeah. Yep. but do you know what? There was a couple of young people who had just had no fear, and they were giving it big licks, you know.
Fantastic.
And the church loved it. And then they gifted us they gave us, presented us with gifts and stuff like that. It was so nice. Yeah.
These magic moments of human connection, just brilliant. That's super brilliant. Bolt FM then, what does the future hold for Bolt FM? What are your plans for the future?
The Bolt FM birthday's in March. So we try and coincide the 2 weeks of kind of morning till night broadcasting for March to coincide with the birthday, which last year was fine because it was the first 2 weeks in March, so we kind of just scraped the broadcast in.
Nicely done.
I know, but not so fortunate this year. Radio studios being soundproofed boxes, they're
with no air.
It's been kind of a nightmare. Yeah. Yep. No ventilation. So it's been a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah.
So what we're really looking forward to is getting a big broadcast on again and getting the young people in here kind of morning till night. But, you know, we've got our 20th birthday this year as well, so we've got a project coming out about that. We're trying to make a documentary with the young people.
Superb.
But then we've, you know, and the young people have got sort of ideas of things that they want to do, different podcast ideas and projects. But what's quite exciting as well is that we're working with the college, Glasgow Kelvin, to create a kind of bespoke Bolt FM introductory broadcasting unit. You know, I mean, one of the
fantastic
things we do is,
I'm
really excited about it because we deliver awards, you know, and what we do with Bolt FM anyway, wider achievement awards. But what this one, I mean, we've built a unit based on what we actually deliver in schools and youth clubs and things like that. So, and it means that the onus for gathering the evidence can be on me and the other staff and volunteers and not on the young people. So it means that it's going to be a more fun process for the young people. They're going to get through all the same stuff, and it's going to be a bit more streamlined for them.
Fantastic.
And then they get SEQF credits for it at the end as well. So they're going to get an achievement in kind of the Bolt FM Introduction to Radio unit.
That's fantastic. That's a real legacy. That's a concrete piece of paper that people can then use to go on to do other things. It's fantastic.
Yeah, 100%.
That's brilliant. Well, is there anything else that you want to say about your own experience of Bolt FM, or is there anything else you want to say about the community and what it means? And
I guess it would just be about that. It would be the community spirit here. I mean, and that's not just with Bolt FM, but, you know, what I've seen with the other projects, but also in the community itself. What's been so good is that a lot of communities, like the ones that I work in, have had a pretty rubbish few years. Seeing the way that communities can still bandy together to really make things happen, to look after each other, has been kind of, it's left a huge impression on me, to be honest, because it shows that we still have that, and it's amazing that we still have so many communities that really do have that ability to look out for each other. And yeah, it's special. I hope it's something that we continue to celebrate and do well in the East End. So
thank you so much, Mark. It was a delight to speak with you. It's amazing the work that you're doing. Long may it continue. Tales for the East is an artist-in-residence project from Glasgow Life. I share the position with my mate Tim Marozzo, who has been taking photos of all the participants. If you know someone who has tales of Denniston, Sighthill or Haghill, and you think they'd be willing to talk to us for a podcast, we would love to hear from them. I'd also love to speak to anyone from the diverse immigrant communities in the area, so please do drop us a line on info@tales-fae-the-east.com with any contacts you think would be willing to talk. If you want to find us on social media, just type in Tales for the East and we should pop up somewhere in that world. Our website, tales-fae-the-east.com, gives you some more info about the project and provides links to the subjects covered in the episodes. And you can also see Tim's portraits on there. Thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more tales with you again soon. Mór an tang, hí mé ríocht, tatibai.